A morning. Today's daf in Bamasia is Kuf Vav. We're starting the Gemara today on the bottom of Kuf Hey Amud Aleph. No, sorry, in the middle of Kuf Hey Amud Aleph. In the Mishnah. Thank Lubman Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Taf. As long as Zechon Nishmas Liber Gabriela Bashmul. Let's begin. And Mekabel Sadame Chaver. Now remember, right, the instructions that we were given on the top of Kuf Dalam and Aleph is that every time we see a Mishnah in the ninth parak of Bat Metzia, except for the first two Mishnayos, so we have to establish and identify whether we're talking about an Aris or we're talking about a Choker. Aris is a sharecropper, a Choker is a tenant farmer. Choker is paying a fixed amount for the usage of somebody's land, so he's leasing the land at a fixed rate. And sharecropping is at a prorate, is at a percentage. So every time we see a Mishnah, so we have to identify. We don't have to do much work, by the way. Rashi did all the work for us. All we need to do is just read Rashi, which I'll do. So let's say you accept a field from your friend, and you're not interested in weeding. Meaning, I'll do all the work, but weeding is not my thing. I don't weed. And I say to him, but look, what difference does it make to you? I'm paying you, so like, what difference does it make whether I weed or I don't weed? So ain't shom him low. So that's not an argument. He's got to weed. Because the owner could say to the farmer, look, you're leasing the land, so you're here, and then tomorrow you're not going to be here, or next year you're not going to be here. Umalas lifne asavim, and I got all these asavim. I got all these weeds. You got to weed. Okay, so. Rashi points out over here, again, as I mentioned, you got to just read Rashi. So this is talking about a choker. It's talking about a tenant farmer. It's not talking about a sharecropper. So the Rashi, Ein Shom Im Lo, V'Haleisa L'Bechach Renusa. Rashi writes that this is only referring to a tenant farmer. Diba Kablanusa, because if we're talking about a sharecropper, Pshita Mimati Amalei Ma'ich Balach. So the argument of what difference is it to you, meaning, what do you mean? It's a huge difference. Meaning if you're sharecropping and the only profit that the owner is getting is going to be a percentage of the land, so then of course it makes a big difference to him. But if what the owner is getting is a fixed amount and he is getting that fixed amount, so then you can hear the argument of what difference is it to you. Okay, but then, meaning that's the argument, but we know the answer also. The answer is, I don't want weeds in my field next year. But at least you can hear the argument. Okay, Gemara starts off. So let's say we have more dialogue between the farmer and the owner of the land. Let's say the farmer says, "Look, I'm going to plow the land after I harvest." And like we discussed yesterday, by plowing the land, you're basically going to be getting rid of all the weeds. So Amalei Chita Mal Yasabiina. So he says, "No, that's not what I want. I want weed-free wheat." In other words, the wheat that is going to grow on the property is going to be free of weeds, and it will become better wheat. It says, really? Good wheat? That's what you want? So I'll tell you what. I'll go to the store, and I'll buy good wheat from the store. Meaning, I'll work the land, I'll take whatever yield there is, and I'm not going to weed, and I'll get good wheat from the store. So again, in this dialogue, in this continued dialogue, so the owner says to the farmer, no, I want wheat from my land. So let's say the farmer says to the tenant, okay, I'll tell you what, you're so bent on getting good wheat from your land. So for your portion, so I'm going to weed the field, so I'm going to give you now good wheat from your land, and the rest of the field I'm not going to weed. So the Gemara says, Kam nasta shemra la rai. So the owner now could say back to the farmer, yeah, but my reputation. Think about what people are going to say on my land. They're going to pass by my land. They're going to see all that weed. And think about what people are going to say. So the Gemara says, now all this dialogue is good, but it doesn't really fit the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, malas lefanai asavim. You're going to be leaving weeds for me for the next season. So Ela Mishum Darmalai Bizra Danafa Nafa. Really, the ultimate argument, the closing argument, and the discussion ender is really going to be all about, look, what's going to happen is if you leave weeds in my field, and even if you plow afterwards, ultimately what's going to happen is that the weeds are going to germinate, they're going to leave seeds, and I'm going to have weeds next year as well. So it is incumbent upon you to weed my field as you are farming my land.
What's the meaning of
Of what? Of
We've had before, you have to call it a mini gamukkah.
Right.
The mini is to be
menachem,
to read.
Yeah.
There's no discussion.
Okay. So, look, I don't know how to say this, but we love discussion. Meaning, I understand your point, and it's valid.
There's no mini gamukkah.
Okay. Ultimately, we're coming back to the same point that you just said. In other words, the conclusion is the same. Why do we have this extra dialogue over here? Okay, unclear.
I think the previous discussion was only on whether you cut it or you uproot it.
He's right, though. In other words, there was the Gemara earlier discussed about minhagim of weeding. That was also part of the minhagim. Okay, we are in the next Mishnah. So let's say you accept a land from your field. And again, we have to answer the question of whether we're talking about arisus or chachirus. But let's just read the Mishnah. So you accept a land from your field, velo'asasa. So, and the field just not producing, okay, and it doesn't work. The field doesn't work. So, now, at what point can we say basically it's a failure of field, and now the sharecropper basically is not going to have to do anything? So, we have two shiurim on the Mishnah. Tanakama says, if you can make a pile, now a pile is obviously not a measurement, and that requires more clarification, but if you can make a pile, so then that's enough grain where you, the sharecropper, are going to have to work the land. And you can't just simply file a non-performance excuse on the land. Look, I'm really sorry, it's just not working. If it produces a keri, so that can be considered, you have to work it. I'm Rav Yehuda, my kitzva bekeri. So Rav Yehuda says that's not a fixed amount. And what purpose of that? Ele mishpa kedei nefila. No, if it can produce enough seeds so that I could reseed the land next year, that's considered sufficient. Okay, so there are two shiurim in the Mishnah in terms of the field is certainly not producing what it normally does, but if it does a little bit, so you have to work it, and then we have in the Mishnah, the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda describing how much is considered a little bit. Once again, we turn to Rashi. Rashi chayv l'tapaba. So you have to work it against your will, says Rashi b'karchom. Ba'alei se'ela b'kablanusa. Now Rashi points out, now we're talking about an aris. This Mishnah is talking about an aris. Why? D'ibachachrenusa mali l'bala sada im yachda lo sov sov chakiru hu nosin lo. If you are a tenant farmer and you will have to pay a fixed amount to the owner, so then it doesn't matter what the field is producing. You lease this field, it's not producing, it doesn't matter. You still are going to owe the owner a fixed amount. So this is talking about, and Aris is talking about sharecropping. The Gemara starts off, Tana Rabbana, Makabal Sada Mechaver Velo Asasa. In Yeshba Kedei Lahamid Keri Chayev Latapa Ba Shekach Kosev Lo. So in the Braisa, obviously the Braisa here is following the opinion of the Tanakam of our Mishnah, and that as long as the field is producing a heap, so then you have to work the field. And the Gemara says, and if we read the contract, which we're about to do, you're going to see that this is actually in the contract. And here we go, contract. Right, all contracts in the Gemara and in the Mishnah as well are in Aramaic, so we get to improve our Aramaic skills. So I'm going to stand and plow and plant and reap, and I'm going to bind and I'm going to thresh, and I'm going to winnow, and I'm going to put a heap of the grain for you. The contract continues. V'tesi ana, v'tito paga. You'll come and you'll take half. Obviously, this sharecropping contract is demanding a split 50-50. V'ana ba'amla v'nafkus yade paga. And me, together with my labor and for all the expenses I put in, so I'm going to get half as well. Okay. Fine. So we just read the contract together. So the contract says that there's an expectation that you're going to get a heap. Okay. V'kamakadei l'amid ba'keri. The Gemara says, okay, but a heap is obviously subjective. It's not an objective amount. Can we try to quantify that even a little bit better? I'm Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chinik, kadei shetamod bo harechas. So if you take the winnowing shovel and you put it in the heap and I can't see the winnowing shovel, that's a heap. Okay, it's so interesting. I don't know why the Gemara doesn't just give the Gemara has measurements of volume, why the Gemara here is measuring in just in terms of a heap and giving us a way of trying to identify what is that heap going to look like. Okay, I don't know.
Doesn't it make a difference if the field is small or
yes,
large?
Yes. In other words, my answer would be yes. And again, in this context, we're just, I don't know. It's strange that the Gemara here is speaking in such an ambiguous amount. Okay, I'm with you. Let's say I put the winnowing shovel into the heap, and I can still see some of the shovel. See a little bit on this side, a little bit on that side. Is that considered a heap? So Tashma, Rabbi Abba, Ledidi, Mefarsh Leminei, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Kol Shein Koneh Shelo Ro'e Pnei HaChamas. As long as you don't see the actual scoop of the shovel. So then that's considered a heap. Okay, and the Gemara says, and that's it.
So that's a small heap.
I can only guess whether you're right, whether you're Okay, now the Amorayim, and I get it, meaning the Amorayim are giving now concrete, quantifiable measurements. So Rabbi Levi says it has to be 3 saw, and Debei Rav Yana says it's 2 saw. Amar Yish Lakish Hasayim She'amru Chutz Min Otsah. Now, even though we're talking about 2 saw, that is going to be after expenses. So after all the expenses, if what is the net gain is 2 saw, so that's considered significant. Tanan Hasan, we learned in the Mishnah over there. Okay, we are going to now take a little bit of a detour and a little bit of a tangent. We're going to go over Mishnayos in other areas of Shas where there are no Gemara. So, and it allows our Gemara an opportunity to give quantifiable measurements to Mishnayos that don't give quantifiable measurements. And so that's what we're doing for the next couple of minutes. So we'll start now with the Mishnah Uksim. Pritzei Zeisim, Vanavim. If I have... the word prutza obviously is somebody who's immoral, but over here we're using that adjective to describe fruit. So an immoral fruit is obviously something which is strange. Here it just simply means it's a bad fruit. Okay, so bad olives, bad grapes, bechamim matamim beisil matarim. So beisil says it's not subject to tumas ochlin, and as Rashi points out over here, it's unripened, and not only is it unripened, it will never ripen. Okay, so that's and the fruit, and that's why the fruit have gone bad.
Yeah.
So inedible. So my priest is Asim, Amar Rav Huna Rashai is Asim. So right then, as if the Gemara, like it's, I don't know what we just added to the discussion. You know what priestim are? The Rishayim. So this is bad fruit. So Amar Rav Yosef Maikra, and we have a couple of psukim that speak to this idea. So one pasuk in Daniel, Bnei Pritzi Yemach Yinasu La'amid Chazon V'nich Shalom. So the Bnei Pritzi, the bad children. So they're trying to create a vision, and they're going to stumble over the vision. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Me'ach V'Holid Ben Parish Shofech Dam. You're going to have a Ben Paritz, and he's going to be a killer. Okay, so you see the word paritz in relation to people as an adjective that describes them as being extraordinarily bad. So now we're taking the same adjective and we're applying it to fruit as well. Now, v'kama pritzei zeisim, the Gemara now is talking about at what point in time is it considered the fruit is really bad, meaning it's just not producing. So, Rabbi Lazar Amar Abbas Kavan Lekora, Debei Rabbiana Amar Sasayim Lekora. So, the Gemara says that it's so bad that I'm taking a field full of olives, and I can't even produce either 4 kav of oil or 2 kav of oil. I take it back. In other words, sasayim or 2 sa'ah, which is 12 kavim of oil. So it's either 4 kavim or 12 kavim. Okay. Velo Pligin, the Gemara points out now, truth of the matter is, even though now we have given 2 quantifiable measures, the truth of the matter is there's no debate. Haba asa demayla kura ba'ulala, haba asa demayla plusa kurin ba'ulala. These measurements, these quantifiable measurements, are talking about 2 different fields. If we're talking about where the olive press is so big that they put 3 kur of olive into the press, now 3 kur is, each kur is 30 saw. So 3 times 30 is 90 sa'ah. So if we're talking about 90 sa'ah, so then if you can only generate 12 kav of olive oil, so anything less than that, and they're not good olives. And that's the pshat in the Mishnah Uksin. And if we're talking about an olive press that only takes 1 kor, so then you're just going to simply do a third of that, and that's going to be 4 kavim. Okay, but the truth of the matter is that the quantifiable measure is going to be relative to how much the press normally takes. And here, by the way, I forgot who asked me the question. Doesn't it matter how large the field is? Well, here in the Mishnah Uksin, yeah, certainly it's going to matter how big the press is. Tanu Rabbanan. We're now on the top of Kuf Hei Amud Beis. Alu B'ilan Shekocha Ra. So again, we're now on this tangent. We're going over various Mishnayos, and we're just now giving quantifiable measurements to these various Mishnayos. Okay, we are talking about A, somebody who's a Zav and somebody who's Tahor, who's going and climbing up on a tree. Here's your basic rules. If I lean on a Zav, or a Zav were to lean on me, so I become Tamei. Okay, so this is the halacha of Nish'an, of him either resting his weight on me or me resting my weight on him. So that is considered transmission of Tumah for a Zav. If we're standing on firm ground together, so obviously he's not supporting my weight, nor am I supporting his weight. If we go on a tree together, on a tree stump together, or I should say rather a tree branch together. So what me and the Zav are doing on the tree branch together? Okay, that's not the point. If it's a sturdy branch, and so therefore him being on it is not going to affect me, and me being on it is not going to affect him. So there is no transmission of Tumah. However, if we're alu be'ilan shekocha ra, if the tree is a weak tree, uvisuka shekocha ra, or if the branch is a weak branch, so tame. So now there's going to be a transmission of tumah from the zav to the tahor, and therefore the tahor person is going to be tame. And that's the Mishnah in Zavin. Now, after having learned the Mishnah in Zavin, so again we're going to try to give a quantifiable measurement. Hey chidami ilan shekocha ra, mari debe rav yana kol she'en bikaro lechok rova. If I don't have the stump of the tree, a rova hakav in the stump of the tree, if I can't cut out a rova hakav, so that is by definition now going to be considered a weak tree, so that by me and him being on the branch, so somehow that's going to be considered me leaning on him or him leaning on me. Now, now that was the tree being a weak tree. What about the branch being a weak branch? Rashi describes, if I put my hand around the branch and it is totally enveloped in my fist, that is considered a weak branch. Tanan Hasam, another Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Oelos, 18th Perek. I looked at the side. It's not. I wish my bekifs were better. So Amahalik bebeis apras agabi avanim shiachol lahasit al ha'adam v'al ha'behema shekochan ra tame. Here now we are talking about walking over a beis apras. Right, we've discussed time and again throughout Shas, and the Mishnayos and Oelos in the 18th Perek discusses this extensively. That if I have a field where Rachmanel son, there was somebody buried, and a plow went through that field and went through the cemetery, and so basically now distributed the bones of the cemetery throughout the field. That entire field now may have bone deposits spread out through the entire field. Now, if I have bone chips, so bone chips are mitame, but only through maga and masa, not through ohel. Okay, that's the idea. That's what the basic things you need to know. So we are describing now somebody who is walking through the base of pras on stones that are chiyachol lahasit. The stones themselves are movable, or al adam v'alabeima shekochan ra. Or let's say I'm on the shoulder of another person, or I'm on an animal and they are not walking that well. So tameh, you become tameh. Now, as Rashi points out over here, if you're walking on, if you're on the shoulders of a person who walks very strong, or if you're on an animal that walks very strong, so even though the animal, the person below you, may come into contact with the tumah, obviously that doesn't affect you. By you walking on a weak person or on a weak animal, so basically, you, it says, considered as if you are connected to the stones below. You now move the bone chips, and therefore you're going to become tameh. Now, that is the Mishnah in Oelos. The Mishnah in Oelos does not describe, does not give a quantifiable definition of what a weak person is and what are weak animals. So, hechidami adon shekol chora. So, what is an example of a weak person? Amishokish kol shemrochvav arkavosav nokshos. So, the knees are basically buckling in as the person's walking. You sure you probably shouldn't go on his shoulders? Okay, just as I say as good advice. But if you do, it's ke'ilu, you yourself now are walking and moving. It's like walking now, like on stilts, if you will. In other words, it's part and parcel of your koach that's walking, and therefore you, by the person below you now, kicking the bones, it's as if you're kicking it, and therefore your tummy. And heichidami behema shekochara. Now, what is a weak animal? So amri de beraviana kosher rochva matila galalim. Well, you see, as it's walking, it's also defecating. So that is a diagnosis. That's a sign that the animal is a weak animal. And again, the same basic point. So it's as if you're kicking the stones, and so therefore you're going to be tummy. Amri de beraviana kosher rochva. I'm sorry. Amri de beraviana letfilo tfilin. Okay, as far as davening, as far as tefillin is concerned, dalet kavim l'tefillah. So, four kavim for tefillah. What are we talking about? The Gemara is going to clarify. Let's say you're carrying a burden on your shoulders, v'higios, man tefillah, now it's time to daven. So you got to stop, you got to daven. And, this is the hardest part, you need kavana. So what are you going to do? So pachus midal kavim mafshil l'acharav. So if that which you're holding is less than four kavim, so then what you're going to do is you're just going to sling it to your back like a backpack, and that is okay. Meaning it is not going to impair your kavana enough, so you can leave it on your back. Umispala arba kavim anicha gabe karka. But once the burden is greater than four kavim, so then you're going to have to put it down on the ground. Umispala. Otherwise, it's going to stir your kavana. Lit tefillin mayhi. Now, in terms of giving measurements for tefillin, what are we talking about? The Tanya, the Gemara goes on to explain. Hayanose masu el rosho. Let's say you're carrying a burden on your head. Vitfillin berosho. And you're wearing tefillin. In the good old days, we wore tefillin all day. No longer. Now we limit it to chakras. So im hayu tefillin rotzitzos, aser. So, as long as the tefillin are sitting under the burden, so then it's prohibited. The imlav mutter, otherwise it would be mutter. So be'ezam masui, amru, and again, now that we've said it, now we can give a quantifiable measurement, amru b'masui shal arba kavim. So, the measurement is four kav. Tani Rabbi Chiya motzi zevel al rosho. As long as we're talking about tefillin on the head. So the Gemara says, if let's say you have compost on your head, so then don't move it to the side, don't take the tefillin shorosh and kind of belt them around your waist. That is not appropriate behavior with the tefillin. Aval koshram al zaro b'makom tefillin. What you should do is you should take your tefillin shorosh and basically tie it to your arm. Basically, move it right next to your tefillin shoyad. Mishum de beishila amru afila matpacha shalahen asa lahaniach al rosho sheish ba tefillin. Even the matpacha shalahem, the sack that you normally use to wrap it up. Okay, and I don't think they had the boxes that we had nowadays, but basically they had some sort of mitpacha, some sort of handkerchief in which it was wrapped up. So you cannot put that on your head, on a head that's tefillin. Vikama amar abaya, fila riva de riva bit de pumpadisa. Even if it is a quarter of a quarter litra, so still it's a bizayon to have the tefillin or the sack of the tefillin on your head. I'm reviewed on my kitzva bikri. Ela imish bo kedei nefila. We go back to our Mishnah. Now again, we're talking about a field that is non-performing. Okay, it's just not. It's not producing much any grain. So, in the Mishnah, how much minimum grain does it need to produce for the sharecropper to have to work the field? So we had two shirim in the Mishnah, the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda. So the Tanakam says a heap pile, which then led the Gemara to a discussion of how much is a heap pile. And we gave shirim in terms of the shovel. We gave actual quantifiable measurements. It then segued into the discussion of giving other quantifiable measurements. And now we return back to the Mishnah, and now we're up to the second opinion of the Mishnah, and that is Shitas Rav Yehuda. And that is, as long as it produces enough grain to be able to seed it in the upcoming season. So Rabbi Yan, Rabbi Ami Amar, Rabbi Yochanan, Arba'a Sa'in. Four Sa'a. Now, I'm sorry, Arba'a Sa'in Lakor. Four Sa'a for normally would be producing a core. Core is 30 Sa'a, so a fraction. Debe Rabbi Ami, Delay Amar, Rabbi Ami, that was Rabbi Ami quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Ami had his own opinion, which is Shmona Sa'im Lakor. Eitzah. Amar le'ahusab le'Rabbi Chama Brei de'Rabba Baravua Asvarlach b'shnei de'Rabbi Yochanan have shmona ara. During the years of Rabbi Yochanan, have a shmeina ara. The field was really fat. And a fat field, says Rashi, can generate a lot of grain with a little bit of seed. Vishnei de Rabbi Ami have a kchisha ara. And during the years of Rabbi Ami, the land was weak. And therefore, says Rashi, you needed to plant more seed during the weak years, when the land was weak. Tanan Hasam, a Mishnah in Pe'aruch Shapizra Esa Omrim. Let's say you had a wind, and the wind scattered all the sheaves around. And now what happened is that in the field you had leket, but the problem now is that because of the wind, I lost where the leket is. The sheaves now have blown everything around. So I no longer am able to identify what's leket and what's your sheaves. So omdim. So what are you to do now? Because you have matanus aniyim. You got to give the leket to the poor. So basically what you're going to do is some sort of approximation. Omdim oso kama leket ru'uya la'asos v'nosin la'aniyim. So the Tanakhama says basically estimate. Estimate how much leket the land generally produces, and that's what you're going to guesstimate in terms of giving to the poor. Rishim Gamlil, Omer Nosen La'aniyim Kedei Nefila. You give to the aniyim Kedei Nefila, and Vikama Kedei Nefila, and again, let's provide a quantifiable measurement. Ki Azra Radimi Amar Rav Elazar Vitimer Rav Yochanan Arba Kavim Lakor. So it's going to be 4 kav for every kor that's produced. Again, a kor is 30 saw. Each saw is 6 kavim. So again, a fraction. Bar Rabbi Yirmi Alakor Zera Olakor Tvua. So good. So I now know that with the measurement is 4 kavim for kor. Are we talking about the kor as seeds? Are we talking about the core as grain? And if we were talking about seeds, are we talking about seeds planted by hands or seeds planted by animals? Okay, Rashi points out, the seed planted by hand, that's a much more precise way of sowing the field. Because I'm taking the seed in my hand, I'm actually putting it in the ground. Seeds, if I'm seeding it through an animal, so there was some sort of apparatus on the back of the animal, I put the seeds in and it just basically spreads it out over the field. So if I'm seeding through an animal, I'm going to need more seeds. So over here, when we're giving this measurement for seeding, is it by hand or is it by animal? Tashma d'chiyasa rabin amar abi abu amar avalaz avamilah amar av yochanan arbaz kavim lakor zera. So at least now I know it is a core for seed. V'adayin t'ibaylach l'mapol se'alam apol shvarim. I still don't know if it's seeding by hand or by animal. Teku. The Gemara leaves that last detail as a teku. Next Mishnah. Mekabel sada mechaver v'achla chagav o nishtava. Okay, let's say you accept a field from your friend. Again, I'm sorry. Let me first explain the first line of the Mishnah. You accept a field from your friend to work the field. So you're leasing property to work it. And then locusts come or wind comes. And when I say wind, it's a wind that destroys the grain. So, imakas medina imenakalo menachakuro, and imenamakas medina imenakalo menachakuro. So, if this is a nationwide issue, so then it's you get to deduct it from your from the lease amount. From the cost, from the price that you have to pay the landowner. And if it is not Makas Medina, so then you do not deduct it. Okay, now before we go on in the Mishnah, again, question. Are we talking about Arisas or are we talking about Chakiris? The answer is pretty obvious. Rashi writes, Makas Medina Mefarsh Begamara. Va'alesa Ella Bechachrenusa. We're talking about tenant farming over here, where you are paying the owner a fixed amount. The E Bekablanusa, because if we're talking about sharecropping, my Menaka Ika. If we're talking about sharecropping, so whatever I'm growing, I get a percentage, the owner gets a percentage. So we don't get to have this discussion if we're sharecropping. If I'm tenant farming and I'm giving a fixed amount to the owner, so then this is an important discussion. Continuing now in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, im kibla himenu b'maos, ben kach ben kach, eina menakalo michakurel. Well, if what I promised the tenant farmer is not to pay him in crop, but to pay him in money, so then I'm basically leasing property. I'm leasing property, you know, for money, I pay him. So, and it doesn't matter whether it does or doesn't. Maybe we can throw a contingency into the contract, but for now, let's just simply say, I'm leasing land, I got to pay him. Okay, the Gemara starts off, Hechidam Yemakas Medina. So let us see if we can now come to a good understanding of Makas Medina. Because remember, if you're leasing property and you're expected now to pay the owner of the land a fixed amount of crop, so the Mishnah says that if it is a nationwide issue where no land is producing, so now you are going to be exempt and excused from having to pay the owner. And so what we're going to be doing now for a good amount of today's daf is try to wrap our head around this idea of what is considered Makas Medina. So Amar Rav Yehuda Kagon de Ishtav Ruba de Baga. So you're looking at the entire valley, and the entire valley is Nishdaf. It is windblown. So Ula Amar Kagon Shnishdafu Arba Sados Me Arba Ruchoseha. Now Ula says, no, you don't need that kind of devastation. As long as you're looking at the field that you're leasing, and you look at the four contiguous properties that are surrounding you, and they are all windblown, so then now you get an exemption. Because you're right there in the middle, and you see, this is not a you problem. This is affecting at least the contiguous properties that are around me. Amar Ula Bal Memrava Nishtas Telem Echad Apnei Kula Mai. And so now, the Gemara is going to be asking a series of questions. So therefore, what do we have right now, in at least in definition of what is considered Makas Medina? So it doesn't have to mean the entire Medina. So it's either going to be the entire valley, or at least the four contiguous properties that are surrounding me. So within that Shita of Ula, which is the four contiguous properties, so the Gemara now looks to further identify. Gemara is going to ask now like about a half a dozen questions, all going to be left unanswered. So let's go. Number one. Bamba Marav and Eretz Yisrael, they asked the following question. Nishaf Talam Echad Apnei Kula. So, Mai, what if I have an entire row, an entire furrow, which was windblown, and it goes from end to end? So is that going to be considered as if we are talking about a nationwide plague? That's one. In other words, basically, is an entire row considered an entire field? Two. Nishtayer telam echad al pnei kula mahu. So let's say that everything is windblown, but an entire row is not windblown from end to end. Is that now going to be considered as if this field is in fact not been affected? Iftika bira mai. Let's say I had the following. There was a field that was contiguous to my field, but it was fallow. Nobody was planting that field. So now I will know that if the contiguous fields that surround me are all windblown, like the leased property that I'm doing in the center, so then that's Makas Medina, at least according to Ula. But what if the field that's next to me is just fallow? Nobody planted that field. So now I really don't know whether or not the contiguous field has in fact also been affected, and so therefore I don't know whether this is a local issue just for my field, or is this going to be affecting all the surrounding fields? Next question. Aspasta mai. What if which was planted around me was not regular crop, but the farmers around me only planted crops for fodder? So is that going to be an indication, and their fields were destroyed, but is that going to be an indication that this is a global issue because the surrounding field, they didn't plant regular crop? Zera acher mai. What if, let's say, the surrounding fields had a different growth that was growing, a different seed? So, can I now say, well, look, their field was affected by the wind, my field also, and can I now say that this is a global issue? Or no, maybe because it was a different seed. Chiti legabi saorim, kizera achidami alo. Another question, what if it's wheat and barley? So are they considered related enough where if he planted wheat and I planted barley and his was windblown, can I now say my windblown is the same, came from the same effects as Hindu is windblown, considering that his is wheat and mine is barley, or vice versa? Let's say it is a general issue, but generally speaking, everyone was affected by wind, the wind blowing, and mine was Yerakon, I had some sort of a disease on my land, and it's not the same problem, even though everyone else is experiencing a problem, but not the same problem I am. Inami kol alon kula b'yirakum v'shlo b'shidafon mai. Or let's just simply reverse it. Everyone else was experiencing disease, and I was experiencing shidafon. Teku, the Gemara, after asking these half dozen questions, left every one of these unresolved. Amalei zara chite v'azahu v'zara sa'are. Okay. Further probing into this discussion of creating an exemption because of a general wind blown to the to all the surrounding fields. Let's say the owner came to me and said to me, "Look, you want to lease my property? That's great. Here are my instructions to you. I want you to plant wheat, and v'azahu v'zara sa'are, and you went against instruction and you planted barley." Now, just recently, in other words, in the ninth parak, we had this discussion of you being non-compliant with instruction of exactly what you should be planting. Okay, and I asked the question yesterday, I'm going to ask the question again today. Is that okay? Meaning, can you be non-compliant? That part remains unclear. Meaning, obviously, if it's part of the contract, I guess, but it's still unclear to me whether or not you have a room to plant other things. So anyway, so you planted barley. Vishadaf ruba debaga. Vishadaf nami hanach sa'ari delay. So now, most of the valley now has been affected by either shidafon yirakon, and the field that you leased as well has also been affected. So my. So now the Gemara says, here gets interesting. Because clearly you're looking around, and the entire valley's been affected. And so you're now going to go over to the landowner and you're going to say, "Look, I'm really sorry." Now, mi amrina damar le ilo zarati chita havanami mishtadfa. And now you're going to say to the owner and say, "Look, I know I planted barley and I know that's not what you wanted me to plant. But let's be honest. If I would have planted the wheat, it would have been the same conclusion. So come on, cut me a break." Odilma matzi amrle, or can the owner say back to the farmer, "Ilu zarata chiti havamekayim bi v'tigzar omer v'yakem lach"? Can the owner say back to the farmer, "Well, no. You know, if you would listen to me, this wouldn't have happened." And the pasuk in Iyov seems to indicate that if you follow instruction, v'yakam lach, you'll have a kima. It'll rise. It'll succeed. So if you would have followed my instructions, this wouldn't have happened to our field, to my field. And the Gemara over here favors the second argument. The owner can say to the farmer, "You didn't listen to me, and had you listened to me and planted what I told you to plant, we wouldn't have been affected."
So that answers the Shaila. So you see that it's...
Yeah, but could be, I hear you, it could be that previously there was no clear instruction. Okay, here he's violating instruction. Next. Nishadfu kosodosov shamachir, vishadov nami ha behadayu. Velo ishadav ruba debaga, mai. Okay, another interesting question. Let's say the owner has a bunch of properties and he is clearly having bad mazel. Every one of his properties that he owns is being affected by shidafon, by the wind blasts. And this field that he's currently leasing out also is being affected by wind blasts. So clearly there's something going on with his mazel. Clearly. He needs to check his mezuzahs. And meanwhile, you look around the valley, and everybody else is okay around the valley. So now, mi amrinan. So here we go now with the arguments. Kevan di lo ishta devru b'dabaga lo menake le. Can I say now to the tenant farmer, "Well, look around the valley. Nobody's experiencing shidafon, so I'm really sorry. You're going to have to pay me." Odilma kevan di ishta dev kulu adaita arate mati amrle hai mishum lesach ditchahu da mishatve kosta dosecha. On the other hand, the tenant farmer can say back to the owner, "Look at all your properties. I'm looking at every one of the properties you own. Every one of your properties is being affected by shidafon. You clearly have bad mazel. So the property that I'm leasing is yours. So this is a you problem. This is not a me problem. And therefore, I'm going to be able to deduct this off my lease." So mistabed amarle mishum lasai didi have mishayli purta. So the Gemara says, well, The owner can say back to the farmer as follows. Look, even if it is my bad mazel, and let's say I'm experiencing bad mazel, but you know how Kadosh Baruch Hu works. He doesn't devastate everything. Meaning, even when you have bad mazel, Kadosh Baruch Hu leaves something for you. So, I'm telling you, yes, you can point to all my properties, and yes, all my properties are being affected by my bad mazel. No argument. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves something over. And so therefore, you know what he left over? The field that I leased to you. That's what he left over for me. And quote Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Ki nisharna ma'at maharbe. Pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves over ma'at. He leaves over something. So I'm telling you now, as the owner says to the farmer, you know what that something is? That land that I leased to you. That's my something. So the Gemara doesn't answer, but the Gemara seems to, at least with the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, favor this argument. So the Gemara says, now, let's go in the other direction. Let's say this tenant farmer has been leasing a lot of properties, and every property that he's been leasing has gone bad. Okay. And on top of that, you look around the valley, and the valley has also been affected. So me amrin and kevin dishad defruba debaga menakilei. So now can the farmer say to the owner, well, look around. The valley is being affected. This land that I'm working is part of the valley. I'm deducting. Or can the owner say to the farmer, yeah, but I'm looking at all the properties you're leasing, and I see all the properties you're leasing from various, from different valleys, all of them are being affected.
No,
so I'm accusing you of bad mazel. Your mazel's terrible. And mishum lasach didachu, it's your luck. Your bad luck. And here, mistabed amrle mishum lasachu. And the Gemara over here articulates that this argument of the owner is in fact a valid argument, where we can point to him and say it's your bad mazel. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. All we need to do is just remember the Gemara of 5 minutes ago. Amai hachanami neimalei mishum lasedidi havem mishayli portad havem mekayim bi kineshan ma'at marbe. Now wait 1 second. When we accuse the owner of having bad luck, the owner can say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I do have bad luck, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves a little bit for me. And this little bit is going to be the land that I leased you. So why can't we make now the same argument in the other direction? Where can't now the farmer say to the owner, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't destroy everything. Mishum de Amalei, he have a chazat li shteyure lach, midu hu mishtayelech medenav shech. The owner can say to the farmer as follows, look, you got a lot of properties. You happen to be leasing mine, but you yourself have a lot of properties. You have bad luck. And if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to leave anything over for you, it's not going to be a leased property that you're leasing. It's going to be a property that you own. So therefore, I'm concluding, it's your bad mazel, and as far as this property is concerned, it's a result of your bad mazel. Makes sense. Gemara challenges based on the following brights. This is a Mishnah Erechin. The Mishnah Erechin has the following, it gives us the following halacha. I lease a land in Eretz Yisrael when the Yovel year applies. When Yovel applies, so that means that at Yovel, it's going to be returned to the owner. Which means, by definition, that every sale in Eretz Yisrael is not a sale, but rather it's a lease. Maximum 49 years. Maximum. And, on top of that, obviously we know when Yovel's coming. So that means then that I'm going to basically lease it based on how many years are remaining from here until Yovel. Now, the Mishnah Erechin tells us that whenever you lease a land in Eretz Yisrael, even though the owner of the land can buy you out of the lease, you get minimum 2 years on any land that you lease in Eretz Yisrael. So, what the Mishnah Erechin is telling us is that they have to be 2 years which are plantable years, harvestable years. So, if it is a year of Shidafon Yerakon, or if it's a Shemitah year, that doesn't count towards your 2 year minimum. Because they have to be years in which you can harvest.
They have to be 2 years back to back.
Presumably, no. I'm not sure. Okay. Ketani shidafon v'yarakon dumi d'shanim kishnei Eliyahu. Now, Eliyahu experienced 3 years where there was simply no rain. Now, ma shnei Eliyahu d'lo havetvua klal, av hachanami d'lo havetvua klal. Aval de ikat tvua salkalei v'lo kamina makas medinahi. Now, in terms of qualifying what is considered years of non-production for this halacha of two-year minimum lease, so we are saying it's like the years of Eliyahu. Now, the years of Eliyahu, there was simply no rain, period. Period, there was no rain. Now, the Gemara says, so if we were to take that benchmark and apply it over here, so just because one valley is influenced, is affected, that shouldn't matter. Meaning, if our benchmark for leasing is like the years of Eliyahu HaNavi, that means no rain at all for the entire country. And it shouldn't be a per valley, and it certainly shouldn't be, like we discussed earlier, four contiguous fields around your field. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Yitzchak, Shani Aslam, Damar Krabbe, Mismach, Shein Tvos, Yimacher, Lach, Shanim, Sheish, Bahem, Tvua, Ba'olam. So the Gemara says, let's not compare the benchmark for leasing and the benchmark for the sharecropper or the tenant farmer. For leasing, it has to be absolute. Either no rain at all, or it counts. Even though, in this particular valley, it's not raining. As far as the tenant farmer is concerned, as far as the sharecropper is concerned, it's got to be there. It has to be able to harvest here. Amalei Rav Ashi Rav Kahana, Ela Miata Shvius Tala Lomin Aminyan, Da Ika Tvus Be. I'm sorry, Tala Lomin Aminyan. Rashi explains the Gemara's question over here like this. Here's what we know: when you sanctify a field, so you're going to be able to redeem it, and the Torah gives the rate of redemption. For every core of property, it's going to be one sela plus one pundayon. How do we arrive at that conclusion? So, because the Torah tells us that for the 49 maximum lease, which is the maximum you can lease in Eretz Yisrael, when Yovel applies, so the rate of redemption is going to be 50 shekalim. Now remember, shekel in the Torah is equivalent to a sela of the Mishnah. So that means now that if I took that number, 50 shekalim, and divided by 49 years, that's the maximum lease, so it's going to come out to one sela and one pundayon per year. Now, of those 49 years, you know you're going to have seven shmitas. That should be deducted off the 49. We should really be at 42. Really, the number should be 50 shekalim divided by 42 years, which, as Rashi points out, comes out to a sela and a dinar, not a sela and a pundayon. So why is it that in the rate of redemption, the Shemitah years count? So the Gemara says, that's the question. So the Ha'ikatvus b'chusar. So the Gemara says, well, even though there is no harvesting in Eretz Yisrael, but there's harvesting outside of Eretz Yisrael. So Amalei Shvias Avkasa Demalkahi. So the Gemara says, okay, but that doesn't matter. Meaning, in Eretz Yisrael, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you're not allowed to harvest. So again, the Shemitah years are not harvestable, harvestable years. So that shouldn't be counted towards the prorating. The prorating should be 50 out of 42, not 50 out of 49. So Amalei Marzutra Bereder Rav Am, Amalei Marzutra Bereder Rav Mari LeRavina Alamiata Shvias Lotala Lomenai Girua Alamatana No Sin Sela BePunda Yom Lashana. So the Gemara says, so how did you figure it out into the rate of into the prorating? So Amalei Shani Hasam DeChazia LeMishtacha Zara. LeMishtacha BaPeire. So the Gemara says like this. Yes, it's true. During the Shemitah year, obviously you're not allowed to harvest the land, but you could still use the land. Meaning, what you could do during that land is you could dry out your fruit. Okay? In other words, the land's still usable. You just simply take the fruit that you grew in years 1 through 6, or I should say better, the grain. Grain stays for a long time. And you could spread it out over the field during the Shemitah year. So you could still make use of the land. It's true you can't harvest during the Shemitah year, but you could use it.
You could say that in a trap year too.
But in other words, for the sharecropper, for the tenant farmer, though, the expectation is harvesting. So the only exemption you get is if you tried to plant and then the locust came and eat it. But if you didn't try at all, so you don't get the exemption. In other words, if you didn't try, so the owner can say to the tenant farmer, hey buddy, you didn't try. Meaning, and the pasuk indicates that even though other people are being affected, But sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu has hashkacha in which you're not going to be affected. So let's say during shepherding you're taking your coffee break. Right? Remember this Mishnah? We did this not that long ago. And during your coffee break, so you go into town, you go to a Starbucks, and while sipping on your coffee, so along comes a ze'ev or a lion, and eats one of the sheep. So we don't say to the shepherd, well, you know, if you would have been there, that wouldn't have happened, because we're talking about a lion. We're talking about a wolf. So... I understood. So we say to him, you know, we evaluate. Even if you would have been there, would it have helped? Yes or no? So the Gemara says, well, again, why would you estimate? If he was there, maybe a Kadosh Baruch Hu would have saved him. We find in by David HaMelech, right? He hit a bear, he hit a lion. Mishum da amar le yavetz chazit li yisrachushe lach nisa. Havitzrachush lach nisa. Karabi chanina ben dosa. Demasian easy duve bekarnayu. So the Gemara says, if you would have been there, a miracle would have happened to you. Similar to the miracle of Rabbi Chanina ben dosa. As per the Gemara in Tanis on Daf Chavhei, right, he was accused of grazing his animals on other people's property. And he said, my animals don't do that. And if my goats graze, and just to prove it, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to have my goats coming back with lions and bears on their horns. And they did. And a miracle happened. So if you were there watching the sheep, don't you think a miracle would have happened? So the Gemara says, then look, I understand. That was a major miracle. And that was Chanina ben Dosa. But we're just talking about you being there and the lion or the wolf not confronting. And it could have made a difference. So Kashi, the Gemara admits, okay, that's difficult. Meaning, as per the Mishnah that says that we guesstimate what would have happened had you been there, and we don't simply say, well, if you would have been there, things would have been different. The Gemara acknowledges that in fact, is difficult. Okay, we stop at the very top of the Amud. Tanichada is where we begin tomorrow morning.